We are very happy to welcome back onto the show Dusty Hera. He covers the Oregon Ducks with 1080 The Fan in Portland. We had him on last week to talk about Derek Harmon, who did go in the first round, just not to Kansas City. But the Chiefs did select an Oregon Duck. This time they go get the linebacker in the fifth round. Jeffrey Bassa is the newest member of the Kansas City Chiefs. Dusty, man, happy to have you join us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. And look, back-to-back weeks, let's go.
This was a player who was a four-year player at Oregon. I don't have to tell you, that's becoming more and more rare in today's college football. What were the positives about Bassa? What do you think got him drafted into the NFL?
I think with Jeffrey Bassa, he's got a fascinating story. He came into the University of Oregon as a safety, and it was one of those situations where as the scheme transitioned over, heading into his freshman year, they went and said, "Hey man, let's try to move you down to linebacker." Then Dan Lanning comes in 2022, and Dan Lanning's defense is predicated, anybody that saw it at Georgia or has seen it with Bassa inside at inside linebacker, it is 53 and a third. They want those guys to go sideline to sideline. And Bassa played at 212 pounds his first year playing linebacker in the middle. And he went through an offseason where he gained 20 pounds in an offseason because he was like, look, I can do it, but I need to bulk up if I want to make this thing a future. So he came in the next year at about 230 pounds, and he said he did everything he could to pack on the weight. It was all good weight, did not lose speed. And he said he taught himself how to cook in the off season just so he could have some extra stuff off training table when training table wasn't there. He could have his own meals, and he's done everything the right way. And I think that is what leads Bassa to the NFL. I don't know what his role in the NFL is going to be, because even at, you know, 235, 240 pounds, he's an undersized inside linebacker, right? And playing in the NFL, but his speed playing 53 to a third, his smarts, and he is always a guy where his highlights and his stats, they're not going to blow your ears back. But one thing that everybody will notice is that Jeffrey Bassa has always been in the right spot. And that is the difference. And with Steve Spagnuolo's defense, with what defenders are asked to do in Kansas City, there's going to be a role for him. I don't know what that is going to be in the NFL at the next level, but I could tell you one thing, man. You're looking at a guy who's, at the very minimum, he's going to be a role player who's going to be an elite special teams player, because he's willing to do anything that it takes to get on the field and stay on the field. And he has all of the intangibles that it takes to make it in the National Football League, to be a highly successful human, not just a football player. But I think that work ethic and that drive that took him from 212 to 230 in one offseason is exactly what's going to make him stick in the NFL.
Right now we're talking to Dusty Hera, who covers the Oregon Ducks, learning a little bit more about Jeffrey Bassa, the fifth-round linebacker that the Kansas City Chiefs got from the Oregon Ducks. How would you rate Bassa's ability against the run? How would you rate Bassa's ability against pass coverage?
In pass coverage, he is a guy that is a quick identifier, always knows where crossers are going to be, especially when playing on the inside, can handle a back out if that's something that he's asked to do. In run coverage, it was missed tackles were a concern for a little bit with Bassa, but he shored that up this past year especially, and I think really turned a corner midway through that 2023 campaign. But the thing with him is that he's always in the right spot to rally, and that is where I watch like a Steve Spagnuolo defense, and when you watch Kansas City's defense, you know, there's a flock of red jerseys that always show up to the ball, and that is where he kind of thrives, right? If he's not going to be the first one to bring him down, he's going to make sure he knows where the help is coming from and funneling guys back the other way.
I'm looking at his NFL draft page, and one of his weaknesses says he is missing the playmaking gene. What do you think that could mean? As someone who saw his entire career at Oregon, if someone says that his weakness is missing the playmaking gene, what does that mean to you?
To me, I think that means, like, he's not like a stat compiler. He's not a guy that is always going to, you know, he's not your prototypical what we think of an inside linebacker to be. And that's, you know, in fairness to Jeffrey, I don't think that's what Dan Lanning in the Oregon defense asked him to be. You know, Tosh Lapoy in that Oregon defense. He's an elite organizer. He knows the scheme inside and out, and that's something that he is always going to do, is he's going to be the guy who knows where everybody goes, and he gets to the right spot. And like I said, you know, he may not be the guy who makes the play, but if you watch other guys' highlights, he's the guy turning the back or turning the tight end or receiver to where the play is going to be made, and it's because he is always in the right spot. So I think that's kind of what it means, is that, you know, he's always, you know, that 53 and a third inside linebacker where you're playing from the sideline to sideline, balls in the middle of the field, and they say, hey, you got sidelines, man. You got to make sure that nothing is going to get past you. That is where he thrives.
That is Dusty Hara joining us on the show today, talking about the fifth-round pick for the Kansas City Chiefs. They go get Jeffrey Bassa out of the University of Oregon. Dusty, happy to have you on the show today. I've enjoyed talking to you, but I'll tell you this. If we have you on the show again between now and I don't know when, something went wrong at Oregon.
All right, well, maybe something great will happen again, but I think you're probably right. If it happens again, we may be in trouble out here. But I appreciate it. You guys are going to love Jeffrey. He's a great interview, great person, and he's going to fit in well with the Chiefs.
Rob, as I am learning more about Jeffrey Bassa, this is the kind of player that you hate. He's not going to get a bunch of sacks. He's going to be a sideline to sideline, see ball, hit ball, probably struggle in coverage linebacker that is going to make you pull your hair out. Now, that is the kind of linebacker that they love. They said it yesterday. Why they didn't take a running back here. This was the best player on the board for them. They said this yesterday.
So we knew before the draft this was a very deep running back class. There's guys that fell into the fourth round that we thought would be gone at the beginning of two and possibly – or beginning of three and possibly maybe even two. So we kind of knew it was deep. We knew Burchard was somebody we liked kind of in the mid rounds. But with it being so deep, there was maybe a chance to get him. What happened was in the fifth, I mean, there was a player in Jeff Bassa who was there, who was clearly the best player on our board. So that would have been a time to take a running back. But when you have a other player that is higher on the board, Brett likes to go by, listen, let's let the board, we've worked on this board for 8 months. Let's let this thing speak to us. So we took the player we had slightly higher and Jeff Bassa. And then it allowed Brett to like refocus and say, okay, I'm going to take a running back now. I know who I want. So we get to the seventh round and, you know, Brett felt like giving up another seventh round pick to move up was well worth it. And I think everybody did, to get the kid that we liked in the mid rounds. So that was kind of the thinking there.
I can admit this. Maybe my feelings on this are wrapped up into I wanted them to take a running back at this spot. Of all the selections that they made, this is the one that's just, eh. What's the best case scenario for Jeffrey Bassa? Is it Drew Tranquil? I mean, what's the best case scenario? He's not a guy that gets after the quarterback. He's a guy that, I mean, on NFL.com, they have his weakness, missing the playmaking gene. He is capable on passing downs. He's a good linebacker who has the potential to develop into a starter. I mean, they got a rotational linebacker that can help you in the run in the fifth round. I mean, I don't know how excited they want me to be about this selection. That guy might very well turn into a good football player. Doesn't sound like he will be an impact player in any means. It's just, you know? The other one, like Norman Lott, is a guy that could, you know, possibly be a guy that develops into a nose-stuffing D-tackle. Ashton Gelati, a guy on the other end, high motor. Noah Williams had 7 interceptions last year. Jalen Royals, great after the catch. They think he is a Rashee Rice-like type. They drafted Drew Tranquil in the fifth round. I don't know how excited I'm supposed to be about this selection. I feel like I have the right amount of excitement for this one. That's cool. I mean, you know. It sounds to me like they drafted Dorian O'Daniel. That's what it sounds like to me. They drafted, what was that kid, Nico, that went from Alabama? What was his name?
Oh, Nico Williams.
They drafted Nico Williams in the fifth round. I mean, I guess we'll see. I mean, you know, it's all right. Whatever. They drafted a special teamer, rotational fifth linebacker in the fifth round. I mean, all right. And they passed on number one running back right there. Again, maybe I'm hating, and I can admit that. Maybe I'm hating because this is where I wanted them to take a running back. But something tells me, I feel very strongly about this. We will look back in time, and we will think, man, they got Jeffrey Bosa when they could have had Devin Neal on their team. They got Jeffrey Bosa and they could have had DJ Giddens. I feel like we'll have that conversation at some point. And I'm going to be sitting there like, man, I told you guys. I mean, I know. You're right. Maybe you guys also feel that way. I don't want to hate on the kid. He hasn't gotten here yet. But, I mean, just he sounds like a really high character, high value locker room guy that's going to help him in special teams and be a rotational piece for them on third down. So we'll see how that works out for him. We got one more of these coming up. We're going to head to the seventh round and SMU coming up in a bit. Keep it right here. So Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
We're going to take our trip to SMU coming up in a little bit and learn a little bit more about Breshard Smith. We were talking about their selection of Jeffrey Bosa, the linebacker out of Oregon. We just had a guest on the show before we took a break. A lot of people are saying that they think this is Willie Gay 2.0. I understand why people would make that comparison. One thing I think is important to note in this is, at least if you look at the measurables and the testing numbers, it is not close between the two in Willie Gay's athleticism and Jeffrey Bosa's athleticism. Like, if you are someone that believes in that RAS, relative athletic score, Jeffrey Bosa tested a 7.93 on that list. Willie Gay tested a 9.7 on that same athletic. It's like, when you're talking about athleticism, they are not close between the two. Like, Willie Gay is a noticeably more athletic player. If you go and look at the combine and the drills, he was far superior to Bosa in every one of their measurables. Same thing for Drew Tranquil. Now, he's a fifth-round linebacker, so I think this is the kind of player that you take. A four-year proven player at a very, very high level at Oregon. You take a chance to see if you can turn him into what you have. But I'll just push back a little bit on comparing him to Willie Gay. Willie Gay as a physical prospect, and there's a reason why Willie Gay was drafted in the second round, and he went 90 picks before where Bosa went. This is why guys move in the draft. Why do you usually fall in the draft or get picked in the mid rounds? You're not as big as some of the other guys in this draft. You're not as athletic as some of the other guys in the draft. That what usually pushes you down draft boards.
I mean, I get why people are making the Willie Gay comparison. I wouldn't make it. And I think in the best case scenario, the Chiefs drafted Drew Tranquil. And maybe the Chiefs' plan is at the end of Drew Tranquil's contract, which I believe is this upcoming season, like this is last year in Kansas City, you walk on Drew Tranquil and you have Jeffrey Bosa ready to step up. But, man, when you read his scouting report, I mean, he's going to be a fine linebacker in the NFL. The Chiefs draft linebacker really well, but just doubling down on linebacker this offseason just is – It boggles my mind.
I know it angers you.
It just makes absolutely no sense. Like, if you think Jeffrey Bosa is an NFL player, why are you paying Nick Bolton? You don't need both. You don't need both. You don't. You don't need him and Tranquil and Leo Chenault and Jack. You don't need seven deep at linebacker. It just. But you know what? Me and Brett Veach see it differently.
Well, I mean, I think you can also argue, though, and I think this might be a Spags thing more than a Veach thing is, and this is where I will side with them here. And I can admit that maybe I just would draft my team differently, but I have to factor this in is Spags knows what he needs to make his defense work. And, I mean, as someone who is arguably the best defensive coordinator in the last 25 years in the National Football League, hey, if these are the pieces that you think you need to make your defense work, I think I got to side with you. It is clear the kind of corner that they like. They like a certain kind of corner. They don't usually take the big 6'4". They look for a certain kind of corner and what are your abilities. When it looks to linebacker, I know that you don't value linebackers, but I think Spags is telling you, hey, my defense doesn't work if I don't have these kinds of linebackers. So you got a guy who, again, got on the field all 4 years at Oregon and has a very defined skill set. He is not a guy that I think is going to be super great in coverage. He's just not athletic enough to be super great in coverage. But he is a guy that has a proven ability to get after the run game and help you in there and also be part of your rotation. There's certainly a role for that in the National Football League. I said this in the last segment. I'll say it again. My issue with this more is they chose to go in this direction over the direction that I thought they should go. But if we are just evaluating the player here, taking a fifth-round pick on a rotation for a linebacker when this organization clearly valued that position, that is not a bad selection to make in round five, just not the pick I would have made there at that position. I would have gone in a different direction.
And I guess, you know what? I'm not in the room, and Brett Veach and Steve Spagnuolo have a lot more championship rings than me. They will always have more championship rings than me. I feel like part of Brett Veach's job is, hey, he keeps telling Patrick Mahomes to do more with less. Shouldn't he be saying at some point the same thing to Steve Spagnuolo? Like, how many times has this show talked about the Chiefs are asking Patrick Mahomes, who is the best quarterback in the league, to do more with less? If Steve Spagnuolo is the best defensive coordinator in the league, shouldn't at some point that same conversation transpire between Spags and Veach? If Spags, this is the type of linebacker I like, and he's my fourth linebacker on the roster, when does Brett Veach say, hey man, I'm sorry, you got to do more with lefts. We need DJ Giddens. We need Devin Neal. Like, you got Drew Tranquil. You got Leo Chenal. You got Nick Bolton. I'm sorry, you don't get a fourth one. It's time to do more with less. It seems like that conversation only happens with the quarterback. Everyone else gets to just pick and choose what they like, but the quarterback, hey, go do more with less. No one else has to have this conversation.
I mean, they think that's why they have Isaiah Pacheco. I mean, that's the answer to your question is they think Isaiah Pacheco is the best possible option for them at running back this year. I mean, I don't want to lose sight of this. A healthy Isaiah Pacheco is a really productive player and answers a lot of the questions that we have at the position. I mean, Isaiah Pacheco in 2022 on 170 carries had 830 yards and averaged 5 yards a carry. In 2023, that same running back that you guys tell me has no vision ran 205 times for 935 yards. To keep it clear, that is 5 carries more than what Kareem Hunt got last year, and Kareem Hunt didn't get to 800 yards. There's no question in my mind that when Isaiah Pacheco is healthy, he is a guy that should get you about 4.5 yards per carry and is a good, capable running back. I think what they're telling you in our offense is we want to get explosiveness from other places on the field. And we think, based on how we use our wide receivers with the yard after the catch, getting them involved in the screen game, that's where we think we can generate those big plays underneath. But we don't think necessarily that we have to get them directly from the run game. We can do that when it comes with shovel passes or jet sweeps or quick screens or getting the ball underneath to Rashee Rice. That is an extension of our run game. That's what I think they're telling you about their offense and how they're handling it and not spending the resources that you and I think that they potentially should have at running back.
And here's where, and again, it just, I actually agree with Brett Veach on that. I feel like what has happened to Isaiah Pacheco, at least from the text line, which is not a perfect, you know, voice of the fan, but at least in the text line, there's this thought that Pacheco's done and Hunt's the best running back on the roster, which is just very incorrect, in my opinion. I like Pacheco. He's a 900-yard back in his career. That is what he is. But you know what he also is? Going into the final year of his deal. Do you know what Kareem Hunt is? Going into the final year of his deal. Do you know what Elijah Mitchell is? Going into the final year of his deal. Now, Hunt and Mitchell are in the only year of their deal right now, but I feel like in the fifth, sixth, seventh round, you can maybe have an eye toward the future. I mean, that's what Rashard Smith is, but Pacheco is a 900-yard productive back, but are you going to give him a second contract if he's productive again? Are you going to go try to draft your next guy next year in a draft that's not as strong at running back? That's where I'm frustrated. Pacheco's good. I actually am a Pacheco fan more so than a lot of the text line. I just know that Pacheco is 17 to 20 games away from his Chiefs career being over, and at this time next year, I guess around this time next year pre-draft, the Chiefs might have one running back on the roster, and that's just not a good build for the future.
I'm actually not convinced they're letting Isaiah Pacheco go yet. I mean, let's see how the season goes, obviously, but I mean, if Isaiah Pacheco was a 900-yard back with a significant injury in his history, he's certainly not breaking the bank that you could bring Isaiah Pacheco back next year on a relatively deal. Let me ask you this question really quickly before you make the phone call. Who has more yards this year, Royals or Smith?
Royals. Actually, I'm going to say it stronger now. Royals, because Rice suspension will give him more time.
Yeah, I think, though, but I will say this about the Rice suspension. it's not like you're expecting Royals to have, what, 200 yards in September? Like, their wide receivers have usually gone, you can expect that guy to contribute in November, December, and potentially in the playoffs. Royals might have one good game early in the season, but, I mean, out of those four games that you think he's going to be suspended, I mean, I'll set the over-under right now on Royals at 85 yards in those four games. He maybe makes one or two plays. They just got other options to go there. You still got Xavier Worthy. You got Hollywood Brown. You got capable tight ends. You'll have a healthy Isaiah Pacheco, knock on wood, for this upcoming season. I think it's an interesting question. Who has more yards this season between those two, whether it's Jalen Royals or Breshard Smith? We're actually going to head to SMU coming up in a bit and learn a little bit more about Breshard Smith and what kind of prospect he can potentially be. Mike Renner of CBS Sports, he gave the Chiefs draft a grade. Here it is.
Yeah, I got an A too. They had three guys who I think are just absolutely perfect fits for what they need. One's Josh Simmons. I think if he's healthy, if that patellar is fully back this year, he is as good as the guys we saw come off the board 25 picks earlier. And then Noel Williams is a Steve Spagnuolo corner. He wants to get feisty. He wants to press. He wants to ruin your day as a wide receiver. And then the fourth round, Jalen Royals just keeps this speed going. This is a dynamic receiving core now. He had the fastest 10 split of any wide receiver at the combine. You see that on his tape. He just had such a weird usage there and got hurt this past year. But he was on pace for almost 1,500 yards this season before he got hurt.
All right, one more player we need to learn about. Well, let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Jordan Hofeditz. He covers SMU for 24/7. They made the college football playoff this year, to learn more about Breshard Smith, the seventh-round running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. Jordan, how are you doing today, my man?
I'm good. How's it going, guys?
Doing great. Let's start with this. What made SMU move positions for Smith, who played wide receiver at Miami and then played running back at SMU?
It was a little bit of need. It was a little bit of skill set. I mean, what SMU came into the season last year, they really didn't need another receiver. But what they saw in Breshard was just a playmaker, and certainly a special teams difference maker, that they were going to figure out a way to get him on the field. And ultimately running back is where that was for them, and it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I'm guessing it was a pleasant surprise for you guys, because you're kind of looking at this wide receiver that transfers in, and he didn't have a great career in Miami. You're not expecting that he's going to be a 1,200-yard back, and you guys are making the college football playoff largely because of how good he was last year.
Right, and his versatility came into play so much. I mean, you look at him, he was a wide receiver at Miami, still as a running back last year. He had a career high in receptions and receiving yards. He set the SMU all-time record for all-purpose yards. He was just so capable in anything they asked him to do. And it got to a point where they almost couldn't get him off the field. They had to have him out there for almost every play, just because he gave you so many options and also just gave the defense something they really had to worry about.
Are you worried about Smith just only having 1 year of college production at the position? We're not talking about a guy that played 3 years of running back. We're talking about a guy that played 14 games at running back. Now looking at him, is that something that bothers you heading into his pro career?
I don't think so, mostly because you look at him coming into last year and he had none. And you look what he did with no experience. I think you put him in that Chiefs offense and you put him around the playmakers they already have. You let the coaching staff work with them. And I think you can develop him really, really well. I think in a way that's almost a nice thing, because he probably doesn't have a lot of bad habits that some guys who have played running back all their life might have, that you need to adjust or unlearn and relearn something. He's able to go in kind of a blankish slate and really start from ground zero with what that Chiefs offense will want him to do and want him to be.
Watching him last year, what are some traits that you like about him that can make him a very pleasant surprise in this year's draft?
He's explosive. I mean, just his ability to find that hole, cut to that hole, and then he's gone. I mean, he doesn't overdo it. He doesn't try to build up that speed too fast. He's patient with it. But then once he gets that hole and once he does turn it on, it's a different level. And that's what made him so special at SMU, is it's something SMU hasn't had in a really, really long time out of that position, was a guy who could just get out and go.
Looking at his receiving numbers from last year, I am a little bit surprised, and you certainly know more about their offense than I am. For a guy who had the wide receiver background that he was, I'm surprised to look at his wide receiver numbers. I mean, they were fine, but like they weren't big-time numbers for a guy who should be able to run and also catch it out of the backfield.
Well, I think a lot of it was the number of receivers that SMU had last year. They were a really deep receiving core. So they were able to rotate guys, keep guys fresh. They were able to use a lot of different things, and they certainly used him as a receiver out of the backfield, but they didn't have to. And so it again was just another weapon that he provided that he was able to do, that they were able to key on every now and again, but didn't have to rely on it or force it because of that skill set.
Right now, we're learning a little bit more about Breshard Smith, the seventh-round running back the Chiefs got out of SMU. You mentioned what you really liked about him and his explosiveness. What are some things that you noticed that are simply going to improve as he just gets more reps at running back because he didn't really have a lot before last year?
Right. I think just his vision. You know, I think there's a definite difference between running a route as a receiver and letting a hole open up and a play develop in front of you as a running back. He was good at that last year. I think that was impressive and a real big step and quick step in his progression last year, but that's only going to get better. And just the comfortability. I mean, one of my favorite things when we talked to him during the season about the position change and this, that, and the other, it was, I'm a football player. Just put the ball in my hand. I know what to do with it at that point. And you can't teach that. That's something inherent in some guys. And so I think just that that football capability is just going to give him a chance to keep developing and keep taking those next steps as a player.
When it comes to ball security, how is he?
Good. There were a couple times, but it wasn't something where it was an issue that was constantly talked about. He did, I will say, on a couple of his, bounced right back to him. So he was a little fortunate with some of those, but I don't think that's a concern I would have any more than any other running back in the NFL that's going to have some big paws swiping at the ball.
Last two things here. When you look at his run style, is there an NFL running back that he reminds you of? Is there somebody that you can say he compares a lot to based on his run style?
Well, the funny thing is SMU head coach Rhett Lashley, when they were kind of figuring out how to use this guy, he referenced Pacheco and how the Chiefs used him. And they were like, hey, if that size and that kind of skill set works at the NFL level, we can make that work at the college level. So I think that's another reason why I think this is a wonderful get for the Chiefs, because you're talking about a guy who has kind of in college been asked to do some of those things that he's going to be asked to do in this Chiefs offense.
That is Jordan Hafeditz joining us on the show. He covers SMU for 24/7 Sports. They had a fantastic season. They made the college football playoff this year, and Breshard Smith was certainly a key piece of that, running for over 1,200 yards last year on 5.7 yards per carry. Jordan, great stuff. You guys had a great season. You guys are looking to go back to the college football playoff this upcoming year.
I think so. They've got they're reloading. College football landscape is so different, but they return some key pieces, including their quarterback. And anytime you can do that at the college level, you're a step ahead of some other people. And they're just rolling. They've kind of built a culture of winning that hadn't been synonymous with SMU football in a really long time. And they're just kind of trying to keep that rolling.
Absolutely. That is Jordan Hafeditz joining us on the show. Thanks, Jordan.
Thank you.
Absolutely. That is Jordan Hafeditz joining us on the show. I certainly understand why the Chiefs took a chance on Breshard Smith late. If you really love this running back class, which we know they did, they talk about this being the deepest class that was out there. You got a guy who, A, doesn't have a lot of miles on him. I mean, he ran the ball 250 times in college. So we are talking about one of the freshest running backs that is coming into this. He is a guy that has a receiving background, can catch the ball, played wide receiver at Miami, so played it at a high level. So we're talking about a guy who doesn't have a lot of wear and tear, still has a lot of tread left on the tires, can catch the ball out of the backfield, and you just heard it, they look at him as an Isaiah Pacheco type. a potential explosive player who can make big-time plays. I mean, that's what he did last season. You guys know I'm big on yards per carry. He had 5.7 yards per carry in a major conference last year. So certainly a guy that is worth you taking a late-round flyer, and we'll see if they strike gold twice. They've already done this once with Isaiah Pacheco, a guy who they saw the traits. He fell in the draft. They drafted him. It obviously worked out. And, Rob, we'll see the same if they can do the same thing with Smith here this year in round seven.
There are other running backs I would have liked better, but at this point, it is what it is. I'm not going to Mel Kiper scream about what could have been. This is the player the Chiefs picked. I do like that he does have less wear and tear on his body than the average running back. Like, you know I love Devin Neal. Devin Neal might be one of my favorite Jayhawks of all time. Devin Neal's been running the ball a lot at Kansas over the last four seasons. DJ Giddens was getting a lot of touches at Kansas State over the last two, three seasons. Ollie Gordon was a workhorse at Oklahoma State, getting a ton of carries over the last couple of seasons. What is it Terrez Paylor always used to say? There's only so many hits on a running back's body before it's over. There haven't been a lot of hits on Breshad Smith's body as a running back. Yeah, part of that's the transfer to SMU. Part of that's the position change. Like, there are reasons for why, but it is nice that a player the Chiefs target they think can be an Isaiah Pacheco type running back is low on hits on his body, which could create a longevity at the position. Again, I still would have liked a different player, but it is what it is, and he is fresher at that position than most players who come out of the draft.
No, I mean, I'm sitting here looking at it right now. I mean, Devin Neal had 760 carries in college. I mean, he had 500 more carries than Breshad Smith did in college. Now, I mean, Jay had a late round pick and all of those things, and I think Devin Neal and DJ Giddens both have a chance to be good pros, but I think that goes to just show you the wear and tear, the tread left on the tire. I mean, they drafted a running back who was really good last year who just doesn't have a lot of carries on his body, and what does that mean for him as he transitions to the NFL? All right, coming up on the other side, there are five questions I think that are left for the Chiefs as we are heading into, I mean, this is the team, this is the roster. They might add one or two kind of one-year veteran players, but 98% of the offseason moves for the Chiefs, at least when it comes to player acquisition and team building, that is done. There's a couple of questions left. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
I haven't kept up with the conversation too much, but I do know that the conversation is happening. Rob, have you seen this 100 men fight a gorilla conversation that has been dominating social media the last couple of weeks? Have you seen this 100 men? How would they fare in a fight against one gorilla? Have you seen this?
I am aware of the conversation on social media. I think it's stupid, but I know it's happening.
No, it's not stupid. Men are stupid.
We're saying the same thing.
Very dumb. When's the last time you've been to the zoo? I'm serious. When was the last time that you took your kids, or maybe you don't have kids, and you just went to the zoo? Have you seen a gorilla? Now, I've recently been to the zoo. It's a really good time out there. You know one thing I've never seen before? I've never seen in person what a gorilla looks like when the gorilla is angry. The gorilla at the zoo always looks fine. I'm walking around. I'm eating things. People aren't bothering me. I'm cool. How many examples do we need of the animals, for the most part, are minding their own business? And then somebody goes into the animal habitat and finds out a very bad lesson. Leave those animals alone. I'm not really sure if the average person, like if you just walk into, let's say, a bar on like a Friday night and you just said, all right, we're going to randomly spin a wheel and you can fight any one random person in here. I think the average person would lose most of the time. That's against another adult male. You now think that you have the ability to beat a gorilla? Is the argument that you're going to, so like, is the argument, because I haven't seen it, so tell me if I'm wrong on this. Is the argument of like person one tries to fight the gorilla and then person two, or is it, could 100 people at one time all try to jump the gorilla and beat the gorilla up? What are people saying that the humans would win in this fight?
So what you're seeing a lot of is at least on the internet, people are using the humans in waves. Wave one is like 20 people. You attack the gorilla. You try to wear it out a little bit, and you understand those 20 are out of there. But then the second 20, I mean the third 20, the fourth 20 wave can eventually wear it down, and people are saying you got to pick and choose your humans. Like, wave one has to be like defense alignment. Get as close in size as possible.
Okay.
Wave two has to be another wave of defense alignment type. Wave three or four needs to be like UFC fighter types where they know how to break bones and things of that nature. It's not Carrington, Rob, Gold, Cody, Bob, and Dusty. That's not how people are doing the 100-person fight.
We're stupid. We as human beings are stupid. And most men just overestimate their ability to do things. I'm sorry. We overestimate our abilities. The average man thinks that they could beat up a gorilla and thinks they could fly a plane with no training. That's what the average man thinks that they can do that. Bro, you got a 19 on your ACT. I wish you applied that hard in school, that you applied all these random hypotheticals. We're dumb. I'm serious. We're dumb. We're really dumb, actually. People think they would beat the gorilla. I know I wouldn't beat the gorilla. In fact, I don't have any beef with the gorilla. I want to leave the gorilla alone. I really do. I don't have any issues with the gorilla. None. What has a gorilla done to me? It hasn't bothered me in any way. I hope he smashes all of you. That's what I hope happens. I'm rooting for the animals. I've seen Planet of the Apes. I want Caesar to win this fight. I want Caesar to win.
Also, the text line's like, people like Mark Henry exist in the world. Yeah, well, you aren't buddies with Mark Henry. So you and your 99 pals that play pickup at Hy-Vee Arena ain't beating a gorilla.
Someone says, I was a D1 wrestler. I'd wrestle him. He wouldn't stand a chance. Let's move on. All right, let's move on. Let's move on.
Did you wrestle a lot of 600-pound people?
Everybody
when you were
on the text
wrestling?
Line is Kurt Angle all of a sudden. Let's move on. All right, let's move forward amicably. Can we do that? I'm struggling to move forward with this because this is the thing. I can't do it. I'm gonna be real. This might be the dumbest internet argument since we were arguing what color that dress was when the dress was clearly black and blue. That's when I realized that we have run out of things to entertain ourselves, and we just come up with dumb things to entertain us. This is the dumbest internet argument since the dress was black and blue. And everybody knows that the dress was black and blue. Everybody knows that. You know what? I don't even want to talk about the Chiefs anymore. We got only a little bit of time. Let's talk about the Royals here. You know what? The schedule is opening up for the Royals. It really is opening up for the Royals. If you want to take a look at it for how difficult you thought the Royals schedule was at the early part of the season, they play Tampa Bay. That is a 500 team. If you look at the schedule over the next couple of weeks or so, this is a really, really good pathway for the Royals to kind of get going and go on a little bit of a run here. They had a really good week last week where they won 6 of 7. Now you play Tampa Bay. They play Baltimore. Baltimore is 11-17. Baltimore has not been good for basically the last season. They were not good after the All-Star break last year and now heading into this season. They have not been good so far this year. You play the White Sox. If there's one thing we know, John Sherman owns two teams. He owns the Royals and they own the White Sox too. And they play the Boston Red Sox, who Boston's pretty good this year. They're 16-14, but I mean, there's really no juggernauts really in the American League. This is a really good time for the Royals to, at the end of this stretch, I'd love to see the Royals over 500. They're 14-15 right now. This is a nice little 9-game, 11-game kind of runway for the Royals. The Royals can very easily go 8-3 in this little runway they have here and find themselves, you know, 4 or 5 games up in 500 and back to really contending with the Tigers and the Guardians at the top of the division. That's what is ahead of the Royals for the next 10 to 14 days or so.
And there's a little news that came across here. They'll have to do it.
How about Cole Reagans?
Cole Reagans will miss his next scheduled start. They're optimistic he'll be starting in Baltimore. They brought up one of their top prospects. But even without, you know, Cole Reagans till potentially Saturday, Sunday, we talked about tread water in the first 30. They're 14-15. That's the definition of treading water. Can they now turn around and have a nice 12-8, 13-7 run over their next 20. And then you look up and it's Memorial Day and you're like, oh, the Royals are 2.5 back in first and they're in the wild card hunt. And maybe Kansas City would buy in because it seemed like people were quick to sell. I don't know. They should have sold their stock.
All right, we are off today. We're off early because of the Royals. Tomorrow, we'll put a bow on all of our NFL draft conversations, and we'll start to transition back towards the Kansas City Royals. Hopefully, the next time you hear from me, the Royals are sitting at 500. I'm certainly looking forward to it. I imagine that you are as well. We'll catch you guys tomorrow. Take care of yourself. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.